Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 25th of April, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. This is a just-in-time delivery. Well, we're delighted to say that we will be joined today by David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives, and we're also going to be talking about the subject of vaccines, and we'll be joined by Polly Tommy and Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. My goodness, things are just speeding up, Mike. We're seeing the political situation deepen by the day. We're going to be talking about deployments by the RN and, of course, Syria, the big issue.
Well, we're going to start off with a bit of good news in Syria because, of course, one of the few people that has been highlighting the difference between the white helmets and the real Syrian civil defence has been Vanessa Bealey. She is in Syria with Patrick Henningsen at the moment, as we know. Well, here she is with some of the members of the real Syrian civil defence, and they felt that her contribution to getting the truth out about who is whom in Syria deserved some recognition. So they've given her this acknowledgement award. She's absolutely delighted about it, and I think it's well deserved.
And it shows what one determined and very brave lady can do, that she's got in there on the ground. She's reporting the facts. She's reporting truthful information. And she's leaving £3.65 billion of state-funded BBC in the dust.
Absolutely. Well, you want to find out more, get onto the 21st Century Wire website. There is a report there. Now, that's the good news. Let's get to the extremely sad news. Because of the funeral for the children killed in the Aleppo bus bombing just over a week ago. That took place this morning at 10 o'clock. Let's just remind ourselves of the story. People leaving the terrorist-held areas, held on buses, the children enticed off the buses with the promise of food, and the children blown up with a car bomb, the most disgusting atrocity I think we've seen in Syria to date, just because of the premeditation of it, aside from anything else. Of course, the mothers kept on the buses. They had to look on helpless. When they were let off the buses, they, of course, came off the buses with an extremely distraught state. And the next thing was that the British-funded white helmets came in with their video cameras and pretended to be looking after these people following a terrorist attack. It was a staged event. That is clear from the witness statements that Vanessa gathered at the scene. As I say, funded by Boris Johnson to the tune of £40 million so far, the White Helmets. They are hand in hand with al-Nusra Front and the terrorists in Syria. If you want to see the reports from Vanessa on this, do have a look at this video clip. This is a 10-minute section out of last Friday's UK Column News. Please share this and continue to share this this report, The Truth About Aleppo Bus Bombing, Vanessa Bealey Reports from Syria. Okay, now let's move on to what else is going on in Syria. Steve Mnuchin, of course, has decided that he will impose sanctions. And he said the sweeping sanctions target the Scientific Support Center for Syrian Dr. Bashar al-Assad's, Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad's horrific chemical weapons attack on innocent civilian men, women and children. It was no such thing. This is, again, propaganda. It's really sad that the American government has fallen for this. And again, Vanessa reported on Friday's news program exactly what was going on there. Boris Johnson had some comments to say. He was absolutely delighted. He said the UK welcomes the US action to sanction individuals connected with the use of chemical weapons in Syria. The abhorrent attack is a stark reminder that the international community must work together to deter the future use of chemical weapons in any circumstances. We welcome the role sanctions play in increasing pressure on the Syrian regime. It wasn't the Syrian regime that did this.
And there is still no evidence. This is something we've been pushing for people to do. If you're going to tackle your MP or anybody else you speak to, journalists from the main newspapers or the BBC, push for the evidence. Where is the documentary evidence? Because there is no documentary evidence, exactly as was the case in the last major incident, where all of the investigation was possible, maybe, might have, but no concrete evidence ever provided, but a sad blamed.
And we must remember that the chemical weapons attack, the source of the video was all white helmets video. And in light of the bus bombing and the witness statements from the bus bombing, we've got to assume that that was the same type of scenario in that case. Pretty unpleasant. Now, of course, the danger is that the US, as is suspected, are going to put boots on the ground. And this from Ynet, pointing out that Russia and Iran have said that they are ready also to put boots on the ground, so that the Syrian situation continues to develop and pretty dangerous situation building.
Well, it's unbelievably dangerous, Mike. I mean, at least during the Cold War period, everybody worked to make sure that tension was de-escalated or protection plans were put in force. People had to give advance notice if there were going to be exercises that were out of the normal programmed exercises, so that the Americans didn't think the Russians were going to do something and vice versa. But here we just see the West with the likes of Boris Johnson, Theresa May, of course, is pushing this, and Trump are simply, it seems, racing towards the wish for some form of major confrontation with the Russians.
Absolutely. Now, just before we come on to vaccination issues, let's look at Yemen, because, of course, this war continues to be underreported in the mainstream press. And Save the Children tweeted this out this morning. The world is abandoning Yemen's children. And they're saying in their hour of greatest need, just 14% of the $2.1 billion needed to save lives has been pledged. I find this a pretty cynical tweet from Save the Children, because at this point, of course, they're raising $2.1 billion for what? There's a blockade on aid getting into Yemen at the moment, which is being supported again by Western governments. So where is this $2.1 billion of aid going to go? Save the Children at this point have said nothing whatever about the fact that the Yemeni situation is being caused through the bombing of Saudi Arabia, no criticism of Saudi activities at all?
Well, no, but let's remember the statement by top British military that, of course, aid in any case is only the thin end of the wedge to get in the hard military power. That's what the First Sea Lord had to say at Mansion House. So we now know if the government's talking in terms of aid, cynically, that aid is only there to open the door to hard military power.
Okay, so quick advertisement then. Vaxxed is being shown once again in the UK in West London. The venue will be confirmed on the day. It's being shown on Thursday, the 27th of April, between 7 and 10 p.m. Keep an eye on the Bring Vaxxed to the UK Facebook page for the latest details on that. And I'm delighted to say we're joined today by Polly Tommy, who's one of the producers of Vaxxed, and also Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. Welcome to the programme, both.
Thank you.
Polly, if I can begin with you, what just give us a little bit of background and why you got involved in making this the film in the first place.
Yeah, well, I mean, primarily because my son was injured by a vaccine. And I think it's very important to let everybody know that I was extremely pro-vaccine when I had my daughter first, and she was completely vaccinated. So I didn't hesitate to question anything on the vaccines when I took my son in at 13 months to have his measles, mumps and rubella shot. And he had it in the morning, and by the evening he was having a seizure and was rushed to hospital. And we were told that it was a common reaction to the MMR vaccine. And he's 21 now, and he's brain damaged. So my mission is to for parents to please do their work, because I trusted the doctor and my son is injured. So I just want people to be extremely aware that there are side effects, and very serious side effects, to vaccines, and they must do their research before they vaccinate their children. So that's my passion.
Suzanne, if you could just give us a little bit of background to your work as well, because many people may not be aware of it. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you into this particular field.
Sure. My name's Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. I'm an internal medicine specialist and a nephrology specialist. and I'm board licensed, board certified. So what happened with me was in the year 2009, I started seeing my own kidney patients injured by flu vaccinations. And I did the research into what's in the vaccine and how it can affect the body. And I was just met with massive resistance among my peers who thought that it was okay to inject acutely ill inpatients in the hospital with influenza vaccines and pneumococcal vaccines. And they were getting sicker. So there were a few people that listened to me, but not enough. So I decided to leave. And since 2011, I've been researching. I've published two books. One is called Dissolving Illusions. The other is called Rising from the Dead. And the first one just goes through the history of vaccination. And I found that there's so much in the history of vaccination that's contrary to the sound bites that we've heard since we were little kids. And basically, I give over 800 medical and journal references as to support my claims that vaccines are not what they're cracked up to be.
Polly, you're sitting in a hotel room as we're filming this, so you're on a tour promoting the vaxxed film. How is that tour going?
Actually, I'm on a tour to record stories of parents with vaccine injury and parents that do not vaccinate their children. So I'm doing the parent study of the vaccinated versus unvaccinated on the road here in America. And we're on our way to England. Tomorrow we fly to England to do exactly the same there to show that this is not America's problem. This is a worldwide problem.
And that showing of vaxxed is part of that.
Yeah, we have a showing on the 27th in the UK and various screenings dotted around England. And then on the 5th of May, we fly to Dublin and we have the premiere there as well.
Let's just run through a couple of things we spotted in the news today and interested in your thoughts on this. This was being pushed out by UK Against Daesh this morning. Hashtag vaccines work, a nice big bright graphic with a needle being pushed into a child. Vaccines work to prevent 2 to 3 million deaths worldwide and the spread of disease. Now, UK Against Daesh is part of the UK Foreign Office, and it is really a Twitter account which is used by the Foreign Office to promote their supposed activity against ISIS. Either of you can make a comment on this, but there's two issues here. The first is the Foreign Office is pushing this out in the first place, and the second is the claim that 2 to 3 million deaths worldwide and the spread of disease are prevented by vaccines. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, what usually happens is that third world death rates are used to frighten first world people, first world parents, into vaccinating. And one of the reasons I wrote Dissolving Illusions is because I wanted to show, for instance, that in the UK, in England, before the vaccine, the death rates for pertussis and for measles were down by over 99%. So this whole your baby could die, it doesn't make any sense when you look at the data just before the vaccines came in the developed world. And we're seeing deaths that happen after vaccination. And so that's something Polly can talk more about.
Yeah, as we travel around America, I'm interviewing parents who children have died from all sorts of vaccines. I mean, I had no idea when I started on this travel. My passion was MMR and autism, and all we're seeing is death, especially SIDS. Parents being told that their children have died from SIDS, and they know that they had the set of vaccines before they found their child dead in its cot. So, and the Gardasil HPV vaccine that is causing death everywhere, flu vaccine. All I'm doing is reporting from the parents. I'm doing the job that the doctors should have done a long time ago. Instead of saying, no, it's not the vaccines, listening to the parents, and that's literally what we're doing. But yes, death, severe allergies, severe brain damage, severe paralysis, it's everywhere. It's horrific.
That is the job the doctors should have done a long time ago. It's certainly the job the media should be doing now. But am I right in saying you're going to Ireland as well with this?
Yes, we're going to be in Dublin on the 5th for the premiere, and then we're going to Cork as well. And we have a lot of vaccine injury stories in England and Scotland and Ireland. So we're going to be recording all of those.
Well, the Irish Examiner here trying to get in before you, I think, because here we have vaccine complacency warning as measles hits Europe. I'm not even going to go into the detail of this article. I just wanted to highlight the fact that the Irish press, just continuing to repeat the same old rhetoric without doing any kind of research themselves. What are your thoughts on this? What are your thoughts on the press in general and the way they handle this issue?
I think it's outrageously irresponsible, actually. You know, I can show you medical journals from doctors in England before the vaccine was brought there that are discussing among themselves how measles is a mild disease when managed well, how the mothers are very pleased that their children get it when they're, you know, between 1 and 15 years old, and how they don't even require any drugs. Sometimes they'll use a placebo, but these doctors are basically saying they're not worried about it and it's not a problem in a British medical journal. So most people that are over the age of 50 have a history of their friends and their family getting measles and it not being a big deal. But now as soon as there's a vaccine created, diseases are portrayed as something worse than the plague. And we're seeing the same thing with chickenpox in America. Chickenpox is something we all grew up with, and now we're told about how deadly it can be. Because if it's any disease that's improperly managed or occurs in people who are poorly nourished or living in squalor, can be very deadly. But that's certainly not the case. And it's proven by the death rate data before the vaccines were started in the UK and England.
Yeah. I hold the media extremely responsible for the fact that my son is even injured. Because, you know, doctors come on daytime television or morning television, and they tell us that vaccines are safe and effective. And we believe that. If there are doctors on TV, they must be right. They must be. And so I think that they're very, very dangerous, and they should really be on the right side of history and stop taking pharmaceutical money, number one, and do the right thing and report responsibly. So I call for people to turn actually mainstream TV off and listen to shows like this. Or shows it report everything that's not fake news. It's extremely dangerous.
Okay, if I may just come in, a really interesting discussion. We've got some good news, which we'll bring up on screen in just a second. But Suzanne, if I may, you said that initially you didn't get any support from doctors and professional colleagues. Has that situation changed? Do you think that more professionals, more doctors are starting to perhaps at least have a more open mind about possible dangers from vaccines?
Well, I don't think it's so much the problem of doctors having closed minds so much as this is that they're terrified. And everywhere I go worldwide, especially in Scandinavia, New Zealand and Europe, they don't have protection of freedom of speech the way we have in America. So I see those doctors terrified. They're not willing to speak because they're afraid they'll lose their jobs or their medical licenses, especially in England. The lady that wrote the foreword to Dissolving Illusions is Dr. Jane Donegan, and she has a great story about how, you know, the GMC went for her, and she won her case, because if you have the facts on your side, you can win these cases. So yes, doctors are starting to slowly come out of the woodwork here. I've been getting letters, you know, when people read my book saying, I had no idea, now I'm horrified, I can't believe that this whole history I didn't know about, and I was thinking about everything wrong. Polly's been interviewing doctors on the bus now, so they are starting to come out, but it takes a lot of courage for these doctors to come out, because if you've got a big mortgage and a family to support, and you've got the golden handcuffs from your student loans through medical school, that could all end very quickly.
Thank you for that. And the other thing I'll just mention here, of course, that certainly in UK, there's no proper forensic toxicology. So we're seeing people die, children die, and there is no in-depth investigation into why they've actually died, which we think is a very serious matter. And we're also seeing worrying changes with the whole of the coroner's organisation, so that it's becoming easier and easier for death certificates to be signed off. That's until now has been two doctors, but we know in the future they want to go down to one signature on a death certificate. What about the United States? Are there better checks on why people have actually died?
No, they're very poor investigations. If one doctor that brought a dead baby into the hospital says that it was shaken baby, the coroner will then go with that in their mind and diagnose it as shaken baby. I have one case that I've been peripherally involved in where it was a radiologist that's really well informed that noticed that the bones were actually disintegrating long before this baby died, and that the vitamin C levels were probably very low, the vitamin D levels were probably very low, and there were all kinds of problems, and the vaccines came into the sick baby and were the cause of the broken bones and the bruising that was seen throughout the body. But there, as you say, a certain kind of investigation needs to be done by a well-educated coroner, and that very, very rarely, if ever, happens. This is worldwide. The same with New Zealand. They had to get special tests to prove that Jasmine Renata, who died after HPV vaccines, actually died from that. They had to send it up to Canada for special testing, and they found, you know, HPV particles all throughout the brain and the spleen.
Okay, Suzanne, thank you very much for that. Well, let's bring in a little bit of good news. This is a report from the Daily Mail. Now, this is the start of it. A vegan mother is forced to vaccinate her children after High Court judge overrules her objections. Now, the mainstream media have been crowing about this for days. In the Mail, they also started to promote vaccines. So we've got a little embedded video here. But the good news is that we can say, I'm going to use the word believe, but we're very confident about that. The mother has now won her case not to vaccinate. We're waiting for full transcript to the hearing. But the significance of this is firstly that there is no law in UK that, of course, children have to be vaccinated. But the local authority ignored that, simply made up the law on the hoof. The second thing is this very brave mother has fought through the courts and now reinforced, of course, the fact that parents can decide not to vaccinate their children. So I'm going to say, Polly, you've campaigned as a mother for the right thing. Another lady has stuck to her guns, even when there were threats that she could go to prison, as a result of your effort. And this particular lady, we now start to see some progress towards, protecting children from vaccine damage. What would you like to see people doing to help your campaign and the work of the Vax film?
Well, first of all, I think it's crucially important. I had no idea that there were even any side effects to a vaccine. Naive as that might sound, I totally trusted my doctor. So I need parents to know that they have to look at the insert, look at what your doctor is about to put into your child. Do you really want all of that in your little tiny baby? So I want parents to know that they can't just blindly trust the medical profession as I did, because look around, it's everywhere. Vaccine injury is everywhere. Look at you go into a shop and you hear the scream, the high-pitched scream of the vaccine injury. That's autism. And you see the paralysis, all these children in wheelchairs and allergies. This is such a sick society now. And from what I hear from the parents out on the road, all of them say the same thing. Their child was fine, had a vaccine or a set of vaccines, and now is really, really sick or dead. And I want this to stop. It has to stop, because you know what? The future for our generation is really, really grave if we do not address the situation of vaccine injury.
The big contrast is when we see these unvaccinated children. You know, that's really the proof in the pudding. Is I advise these parents to go talk to people who have not vaccinated their children, who are 15 and 20 years old, and ask them how many antibiotics they've needed, how many allergies they have, how many medical illnesses, how many psychological medications they're on. The contrast is really amazing.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you both very much for that.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us. We're going to move on with the rest of the news now. You're welcome to stay and comment on anything else you see, but I'll be in touch with you after the program in any case. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's stick with the subject of protection of children, and we'll go to child abuse. Now, this is really incredible reporting. This is the Telegraph from a few days ago. And what are they doing straight into attacking somebody who's come forward talking about abuse? Look at the words, child sex abuse, fantasist, lurid claims. And this is just amazing reporting by the Telegraph. Key parts here. Telegraph investigation in September 2015 showed that an abuse victim Darren was deeply troubled witness who'd been jailed for 2 years for making hoax bomb calls, threats to neighbours. He'd been in a foster care for about 6 months when he was abused. So this whole article is undermining the status of the person who's come forward to talk about being abused, and the language, the adjectives used, clearly designed to help undermine this person. And of course, what did this particular gentleman, Darren, claim? Well, he was claiming that he was witnessing abuse by key establishment and political figures. Well, this gentleman features in the article, former head of the Met paedophile unit, Paul Settle. We have heard, it's hearsay, but we've heard abuse victims say they're not sure whether they trust this man. But look how the article goes on. Darren went on to lodge a complaint with the Independent Police Complaints Commission that personal and sensitive details surrounding the case had been leaked to the media, including The Telegraph. And the watchdog launched an investigation into Detective Chief Inspector Paul Settle, the former head of the paedophile unit, which remains ongoing. So there is an investigation ongoing in which The Telegraph itself is involved, but they are reporting a story to undermine the witness who's actually made the initial complaint.
How does that work?
Well, I think it's something that needs to be taken up. They even put in a piece of text defending Paul Settle. This is a friend of his, says he's a very nice man, and it's outrageous that there should be an investigation still going on. Well, what sort of journalist would produce a story like this? Well, here he is, Robert Middick. And we called the Telegraph this morning. We questioned as to whether he'd ever met or interviewed Darren, the abuse survivor. He refused to say. He asked, "Who the hell are you?" And he slammed down the phone.
Okay.
So my take on this is that he didn't interview the gentleman concerned. I'll add this in. I think he never investigated Darren. So you write a story which undermines an abuse victim and whistleblower while an investigation is still in place. This is pretty devious reporting. And of course, nothing was said about the true history of the abuse that Darren had been through. So if we're criticising the media again, I think this is some of the worst reporting that we've seen in quite a long time. We better just bring in the BBC briefly to keep things fair. I did smile to myself that BBC Reality Check this morning was getting very excited over the number of children in a class. What they're not reporting, since we've been talking about vaccines, is that in some South Wales schools, over 50% of the primary school classes have special needs. Autism, of course, is part of that. The BBC not reporting that, but it's happy to get embroiled into the politics of how many children in a class. I'm just going to put in an ad here for UK column. This is, where's this taking us? Well, we see people being made ill, but let's remember that ultimately the government wants to be able to track and monitor every adult and child, not only in UK, but on the planet.
Well, we might be coming onto that a little bit later, but let's look at some defence news. Well, Jens Stoltenberg, NATO Secretary General, is heading off to Malta in a couple of days for the informal meeting of EU ministers of defence. Not sure what they're meeting about. They're not making that terribly public. He is going to visit Malta the 26th and 27th of April to attend the informal meeting. He's going to meet with the Prime Minister of Malta. He's going to meet with the Minister of Foreign Affairs and the Minister of National Security. That's all great. Federica Mogherini is going to be there because this is a special meeting about the relationship, the growing relationship of NATO and the European Union. I've been a little sarcastic on that comment. Let's bring David Ellis in at this point. NATO and the European Union meeting on defence matters, once again, there's no EU military unification as part of NATO there.
Oh, really? Well, you're just getting a, you know, this is just a vehicle now, isn't it? The NATO is just a vehicle to get the national militaries unified into the EU unified military union. So anybody that can't see that coming tactically just needs to just stop for a few seconds and have a word with themselves and just have another look at the end and look down the other end of the telescope just to see exactly what's going on. It's just bussing national militaries into military union. That's what it is now. It's a vehicle for that. Otherwise, why would they be meeting with Federica Mogherini? They don't have a military. They want to acquire one. They're not going to build their own. They're just going to unify the existing national militaries into the EU. So this is the big misconception, isn't it? People think that that it's nothing to do with us. Believe you me, it's everything to do with us.
Absolutely. Well, let's look at the Royal Navy then. And here we go, HMS Severn. This is a patrol boat, fishery protection.
Offshore protection vessel.
Yes. Cool, yeah. Well, that is going to be mothballed this year. Don't know whether it's going to be scrapped or who it's going to be, perhaps sold to Turkey maybe. But certainly 14-year-old boat is coming out of service this
Which
year.
Which is not old, basically.
No, it's not very old. One of two this year, it seems. And what's that? RFA Gold River is the other one being scrapped this year. We've got HMS Ocean featuring on Channel 4, actually, quite a lot at the moment. Is going to be scrapped next year. And then two more ships the following year. So,
of course, one of the ships they've been talking about is HMS Ocean, which featured on a TV documentary last night. I didn't watch it, but people who did watch it, said that, of course, there was no mention made of the ship being scrapped. So,
yes, yeah, indeed. But good news, guys, good news, because the contractor MBDA has been awarded a contract by the Ministry of Defence to integrate the Meteor missile into the F-35 platform. So they're pretty excited about that. Yesterday's contract, they say, helps de-risk the integration effort and includes the mixture of text assets, productionization, and engineering work needed to support Meteor's compatibility and use from the F-35. This is excellent news for the F-35 Lightning Force, which is planned to be armed with the game-changing Meteor missiles in the 2020s.
So we haven't quite got it yet, but it's coming.
We haven't got it yet. We haven't really got very much yet. Quite a number of things are coming, if they ever come.
And the other thing I noticed in this procurement exercise, David, which I find just astonishing, is they've already admitted that less than a couple of years, we're not going to have any surface-to-surface missiles for the warship at sea. And there isn't any mention of surface-to-surface replacement for the Type 26 in this procurement statement. The military is simply being taken apart day by day, while the Conservatives and Michael Fallon simply deny it and talk as if everything is growing and increasing. Is this my imagination, David? I don't know what to say, really. It's surreal.
It's not your imagination for officer, you know. I mean, this is, you know, what we've got here is some kind of crisis management PR technique being used to sort of say to everyone there's jam tomorrow. But the jam tomorrow, frankly, is the groundwork is being set now today by these cuts. They're not cuts. What they actually are is EU military unification process. So that's not just unification of the militaries themselves, the national militaries themselves. It's unification of all of the industry and the procurement and so on and so forth in the whole of the backstage defence arena that will all be unified as well. So it's an all-in concept that the single point budget that's required by the EU in order to precipitate with the euro requires all of this being governed from Brussels and the ECB and the BIS and the Bank of England. They have to govern not just the policy, but the money flows to and fro. And it gives them a terrific political lever to be able to pull to say, you know, you can make this and you can make that and you can't. Sorry, you've lost out there, Wales. You won't be making the steel. And that's just an example. It could be the guys in Barrow that won't get the job, or it could be the guys, you know, in our what's left of the rest of our engineering. But this jam tomorrow syndrome is incredibly dangerous, because the criticism that's coming out now against Corbyn dismantling is you know, this sort of defence chatter that we've got that's having a go at Corbyn. Well, I mean, who are the Tories to say anything about defence cuts? Let's look at what John Knott did in the Knott review. Let's look at what happened in the Gerald Howarth review of 2010. And subsequently in 2015, the Tories have, I mean, some guys on Twitter were saying that this was decimation. No, an apt Roman term for this Roman concept, isn't it? But decimation was for the troops that hadn't performed properly. And one in 10 would be summarily smashed up and killed by their own soldiers they were working with to improve productivity. But that's not the case here. What we've got is more like 9 out of 10. Of our things from a decade's perspective. But the men and troops have performed perfectly well. It's the politicians that should be decimated here because they've failed.
Yeah. You've talked about the language in the future, jam tomorrow. We're seeing more and more this very bizarre language used by politicians and indeed civil servants, where they seem unable to see the problems around us today because in the future it will all be okay. And it has been suggested to me that this is highly reframed language. So you now have people who believe in this living in the future. In the future, it will be OK. Therefore, we don't really need to worry if we've got a crisis and things falling apart around us today.
But David, we're going to have this huge gap in capability as this unification process continues. But in the meantime, there are real events happening in the world like Syria. And if we're looking at the situation where the US is going to stick boots on the ground, possibly with the support of the UK, and we have Russia and Iran offering to support Assad if he asks for that support, where does that leave Europe, actually?
Europe will be for it. The mobilisation is taking place now. The pretext of war is already well underway. The mobilisation is starting to happen. So this is just a question of political alignment in Europe with whatever event that comes next, as if the events that are there now are not bad enough in terms of sort of humanity and species. But the event will come. We've not had enough traction with this alleged chemical, biological nonsense. So there's going to be something subsequent. There will be another event. The chances are it will be bigger and better in order to sort of get this alignment and it'll be bounced in. I mean, that sounds sounds awful, but obviously, you know, the question I'm asking is what's next? As I said, you know, this chemical and biological thing, no one's buying that. We're all going no, you know, and we're back to where we were with the last round when Parliament said no to a war in Syria. So this has been festering for a very long while. But what the potential is, of course, is that what little is left, it won't be a problem that there's gaps and the military's been, you know, hollowed out. And it's a terrible thing to say because it's been completely dismantled deliberately under this policy. But what will happen is it will just get bounced into EU4, which was announced, I think, last week. And then off they'll go. And it'll be a done thing and a done deal. And how awful that will be, because that will be really the start of the very end of Her Majesty's Armed Services in the fashion that we've known it. And I think that this is the biggest thing that, you know, for decades now, this has gone unsighted, unchallenged. People are refusing to use the correct terms of reference of what it is. It's not an EU army, it's EU military union. And there is a process called EU military unification. And this is what's going on. So people need to use the right references. They need to start asking these questions of their politicians as to what's happened and why this has not been cited. Because if it's not challenged, the whole shape of all this arena will change completely, and it will change completely forever.
OK, well, let's bring in the daring Royal Navy. This is quite classic. So Daily Mail here reporting. What a headline. So how do you like it, Vlad? How do you like it, Vlad? Royal Navy sends message to Putin by sailing HMS Daring into Russia's own backyard. So into the Black Sea has come HMS Daring. Hostilities declared, probably life expectancy of the ship, 30 minutes. And I'm not joking. What is going on here? This is deliberate provocation. Thank you, Mike. I'm stuttering because I find it increasingly difficult to know how to describe this pantomime that we see, dangerous pantomime. So here's Daring pushed forward. This is the global warship that, according to the Ministry of Defence, Britain is now going to rule the world with this ship. Well, let's have a look at Portsmouth. This was a report that you tweeted out yesterday, a retweet of somebody else showing a wonderful shot of Portsmouth with 5 of 6 Type 45 destroyers in Portsmouth. Notice the size of the naval base. Notice how empty it is. And then think that the pattern is even worse in Devonport, Plymouth, the Plymouth end where we are, where you have the largest naval base in Plymouth, virtually empty, just extraordinary. But behind the scenes, you've picked up on this, David. This is reports about the nuclear energy policy for Europe. I'll just bring in this report from the voice the European nuclear industry. Four Atoms said today it welcomes the legislative proposals and considers that the package could ensure a coherent and optimal approach towards meeting the EU 2030 energy and climate objectives, provided it takes into account the views of the nuclear industry. So what do you see going on here?
This is very straightforward. If we want this thing called the EU, this corporation, to turn into a supranational state, it would be, you know, it'd be self-evident that it would want its own currency, its own military, and its own nuclear weapons. Now, in order to produce nuclear weapons, you need fissile material. So to produce your own fissile material, you need nuclear piles, which are, in effect, power stations. But that's not really what they are. They do produce some electricity during their cycle, but the predominant function of a nuclear power station is to produce fissile material. So with the strategic warning and forecast that we produced appertaining to the EU wanting to take control of British nuclear weapons, this goes hand in glove with that. Because the EU, in order to carry on with nuclear weapons and be a state, if that's its goal, would have to produce its own fissile material, FISMAT. So, you know, it needs its own power station. So this completely corroborates, you know, linear with our warning that this is the case. And this is the subject matter that we all need to talk about. And we all need to talk about it now during this general election campaign. It's vital.
Yeah. Well, let's bring in this part of it. Picked up on this. It's the report from a while ago in Breitbart, but they're picking up on Marine Le Pen warning about a totalitarian European Union and the plan to become a nuclear armed power, which she describes as madness. It's quite interesting, though, how this is described by Breitbart, because it says whilst the plans have been considered by, quote, fringe Europhile diehards. So anybody that's reporting what's really going on with the integration of nuclear power in Europe, you are a fringe Europhile diehard. A flurry of articles in recent weeks discussing the plans and a resurgence of interest has caused concern, and Marine Le Pen has spoken out. And then it comes in again, according to these claims, these fringe European defence theorists are speaking up for the plans. So I thought, well, that's a pretty hard attack on anybody pointing a finger with some evidence. And I wondered who produced the article. Well, here he is. This is the deputy editor, Oliver J.J. Lane. How old is this young man, do you think, Mike?
15.
And he's pointing a finger at people who clearly know what they're talking about and warning about, and branding them conspiracy theorists and fringe Europhiles.
I noticed before you go on there that he puts his locations being London, Devon and Warwickshire. Maybe he'd like to pop in and see us.
Well, I think we need to track him down, because I also found his name attached to this, the British Monarchist League. So this young man who's attacking people who are actually warning about the fact that Europe is still working to take our military and our nuclear weapons says he's standing up for the monarchy in UK. I think we need a bit of further work on that young gentleman.
OK, running out of time, so let's just quickly run through this one. 30,000 London gun owners hit by Met Police data breach, and the data breach is in inverted commas. This is from the Register. They're saying London gun owners are asking questions of the Metropolitan Police after the force seemingly handed the addresses of 30,000 firearm and shotgun owners to a direct mail marketing agency for a commercial firm's advertising campaign. The first any of the affected people knew about the blunder was when a leaflet, which is pictured in the article, go and have a look at it, landed on their doormats on Tuesday's post. The leaflet was titled "Protect Your Firearms and Shotguns with Smart Water," and Smart Water is an invisible ink, and you mark your property with it and so on, and if you're burgled, a UV light could be used to identify it. And so many questions being asked here. Well, I just want to remind everybody what we mentioned last week on this issue, because of course Cressida Dick took up her role as head of the Met Police. And she described us as living in a brave new world, that huge numbers of members of the public want to interact with the police in different ways. And so she's setting up the digital police. That was her phrase, digital police. She said, "I started policing 34 years ago before any of these things were ever imagined," and so on, and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, The key point is here, I wanted to remind everybody that on the same day on the Radio 4 Today programme that Cressida Dick was being interviewed, they also interviewed Gloria Laycock from the University College London. She, of course, was pushing this issue of big data and policing and gathering data. And what was really fascinating was about this was she said that they had set up a secure data laboratory, which was accredited by the Met at the university, where any academic in the United Kingdom could get access to confidential data, including the names of people involved in crimes. And of course, we were saying that this was part of this pre-crime initiative at the Institute for Global City Policing. They had set up a memorandum of understanding with the Mayor of London for this. And her comment, if we remember, on Radio 4 about a week ago was that the Data Protection Act is one of the banes of her life. It's about protecting data and not protecting people. So this is a collaborator with the Metropolitan Police. It's all about big data. It should come as no surprise under these circumstances that the Metropolitan Police is commercialising their big data and selling database information off to corporate
And putting people at risk, because if you're a gun owner, you don't want the wider world knowing you've got a gun there, because many people would be thinking, why? Because you're armed. But actually, of course, makes the house a target for burglary where people want to obtain weapons.
Well, I would just like to ask, is this part of this programme? Because obviously you could imagine a scenario where a list of names and addresses goes out into the public and there's some kind of academic process going on behind to track how those names and addresses are used, how many of those names and addresses end up in the hands of criminals, how many guns are stolen as a result. That would be very good for their database for pre-crime in the future.
Well, anything's possible, because, of course, nobody knows what the intent of these people is when they make these policies.
I think we're going to end with a bit of amusement, because Jimmy Wales, of course, who created Wikipedia, and we all know how honest, correct, how balanced Wikipedia is. They're always correct about everything, aren't they?
Well, mostly.
Well, have a look at this.
Occasionally.
The news is broken, but we figured out how to fix it. See, before the internet, we could only get our news from traditional news organizations. Editors, fact-checkers, and reporters were the gatekeepers of news, and we trusted them to tell the truth. We even paid for them to tell the truth. That's how much we respected the news. Then the news went online, and suddenly we wanted it all for free, and we wanted advertisers to pay for it. This is a problem. Because ads are cheap, competition for clicks is fierce, and low-quality news sources are everywhere. Social media, where most people get their news these days, is literally designed to show us what we want to see, to confirm our biases, and to keep us clicking at all costs. It fundamentally breaks the news. And the truth is, on the internet, no one is guarding the gate. So it's time to rethink the gatekeeper. And we call it Wiki Tribune. Wiki Tribune is a new site with a new model for the news. It takes professional, standards-based journalism and incorporates the radical idea from the world of Wiki that a community of volunteers can and will reliably protect the integrity of information. Articles are authored, fact-checked, and verified by professional journalists and community members working side-by-side as equals, and supported not by advertisers, but by readers who care about good journalism enough to become monthly supporters. There's no paywall, so anyone can read Wiki Tribune. Anyone can flag or fix an article and submit it for review. As the facts are updated, the news becomes a living, evolving artifact, which is what the internet was made for. Wiki Tribune is launching advertising-free, created by professionals, and supported and verified by the people who care most about the news. Volunteers, supporters, you. So sign up now to support Wiki Tribune. It's time to fix the news.
David, the news has to be fixed, and the way we're going to do it is to make it a fluid thing. This is Orwell at its best, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? It's big data, data mining, data harvesting. Oh, crikey, who's got control of all of this? When you look at the current situation that's going on, it's escalated from Brexit to now this general election campaign, of just what's going on with people's personal real-time live files that are being created by large computing companies and large analytic companies, that we'll see, completely fluid real-time data accessed by these people on every single person in Britain in real time. So the fact that these guys are talking about their own version of the truth and the news is their version. Now, it's very much like Pontius Pilate, isn't it? What is the truth? What is the fact? I don't see this as a solution. It's all very admirable, but is it a solution? No, probably not.
It's not a solution, Brian.
But it is a reaction to what we are doing. I firmly believe this, that we're now seeing them realise that they just can't convince people through the set piece articles in major newspapers, and they certainly can't do it through the BBC or the other commercial TV channels. They realise that people have now got their own source of news and they're going to try and get back in amongst it. Yeah. I don't think it's going to work.
So that's us.
That's us. David, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to all our viewers and listeners today. Thank you very much to the people who've sent us in donations over the last few days. That's much appreciated. But we'd still like to ask, if you like what we do, then take a subscription, because, of course, then we know when money is coming in, and we do want to expand the UK column. Pass us on to your friends and family and anybody else. And stay with us. We will be back at the same time tomorrow. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.